KYW News Radio original podcasts.
The Week in Philly on KYW News Radio is recorded and edited every Friday afternoon. For the latest updates to any of the stories you're about to hear, listen to KYW News Radio anytime on your smart speaker or the Odyssey or iHeartRadio apps. Visit KYWNewsRadio.com or follow us on social media at KYW News Radio.
This is The Week in Philly from KYW News Radio. Sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love.
Welcome to our weekly look at the stories that have been making headlines in Philadelphia and the region. My name is Matt Leon, and over the next hour, we will bring in KYW News Radio reporters to break down the stories you have been talking about. Mayor Sherelle Parker not backing down from her proposed rideshare tax.
Rideshare companies like Uber have launched their own campaign against the tax.
Mike DiNardo will have that story. Then we talk with Nigel Thompson about Philadelphia City Council advancing legislation focusing on ICE.
It is a package of seven bills, to be exact.
Raquel Williams will then stop by to tell us about Black Maternal Health Week.
Black women are 3 to 4 times more likely to die from pregnancy-related causes than white women.
Officials are working to identify a woman who has been hospitalized for almost a year after being hit by a car on Broad Street.
She was in a coma for a long time. I'm unable to speak.
Kristen Johansson will tell us what clues investigators have about her identity. The Flyers are back in the playoffs for the first time since 2020.
They got hot. They played very well.
Dave Uram will have the details. And then Sherrod A. Howard will tell us about a big change for June's Pride Festival in Philadelphia.
Philly Pride 365 is taking the party to the Parkway.
All that is ahead over the next hour. I hope you'll join us for the Week in Philly from KYW News Radio, and we will get started right after this.
How dare you tell me, as mayor of this city, to tell the people in this city that we cannot and should not enact what is one of the most limited powers that we have.
This is the Week in Philly, and lots to talk about on the Philadelphia schools front. And for that, let's bring in KYW's Mike DiNardo. And Mike, we've talked the last several weeks about things being done to try and bridge the Philadelphia School District's $300 million budget deficit. The mayor's proposed rideshare tax has been in the headlines, and this week, Mayor Sherelle Parker made it clear she is not backing down from that proposal.
No, she's not. The mayor said if her $1 a trip rideshare tax is adopted, it would generate money that would prevent 340 school-based cuts, including teachers, counselors, and school climate managers. Rideshare companies like Uber have launched their own campaign against the tax with in-app messages saying learn more about the mayor's proposed tax. But at a news conference Wednesday, Mayor Parker defended the tax.
Rideshare companies, they have the option of absorbing this cost for their customers and paying this tax. So don't believe the ads that you see.
Now, Uber, in a statement, said the city's proposal explicitly requires the tax to be collected from passengers and that the mayor is wrong when she says rideshare companies have the option to absorb the tax.
Any other movement on the school funding front?
Even though the rideshare tax would preserve school-based jobs, Superintendent Tony Watlington repeated that not only would there be central office cuts, but that school-based substitute teachers would be cut as well. And the district would be also looking to modify vendor contracts that weren't providing returns in the classroom. The whole city budget, including the mayor's proposed rideshare tax to help the district dig out of that budget deficit, is still the subject of negotiations with city council.
Now, also a Philadelphia school this week had a couple of special guests on Monday. How were the King and Queen of the Netherlands received at Kensington High School for the Creative and Performing Arts?
They were received very well. As part of their whirlwind tour through Philadelphia, which saw them stop at Independence Hall, King Willem Alexander and Queen Maxima were treated to a choral and dance performance at Kensington Kappa. They seemed to genuinely enjoy their interaction with students, asking them about the value of arts education. and about their interests outside of singing and dancing. The students told us this visit inspired them to look more into the history between the U.S. and the Netherlands.
This is a moment of my life that I will treasure.
The biggest cheer of the day, Matt, came up when the superintendent asked the students whether they would like to perform in the Netherlands someday, and they responded with a resounding yes.
One other note on the school's front, we had some really high temperatures, unusually high temperatures for this time of year this week, and that led to some controversy involving air conditioning in Philly schools. What were the details here?
Well, normally, the building engineers wouldn't activate the air conditioning systems in the schools that have AC until May 1st, but with temperatures in the upper 80s and topping 90 on Thursday, the district began that transition early. Buildings are being switched over from heat to AC day by day. We did hear about one school where the interior temperature on the third floor on Tuesday hit 90 degrees, so they brought in fans in the classrooms to make conditions more bearable. Overall, there are 53 of Philadelphia's 249 schools, Matt, that don't have any air conditioning at all.
So now let's switch gears to SEPTA, their service plan making some headlines this week.
Yeah, SEPTA held an open house on its new bus network, which is a done deal. It's no longer a question of how to do it, but when. SEPTA is phasing in a top-to-bottom overhaul of its bus routes, reducing the total number from 124 routes to 106. The open house had easels explaining the changes in various routes, with the first phase of these changes beginning this August. Now, some riders we talked with said SEPTA was doing too much all at once, but SEPTA said these changes have been in the works for years with hundreds of public meetings and outreach sessions. And one rider said, why doesn't SEPTA just add to its service by buying more buses and hiring more drivers? But SEPTA says with limited resources, this overhaul is designed to provide more frequent and reliable service with the equipment it has.
Also this week, we saw some construction plans start to come to fruition dealing with the Market Street Bridge. As a result of that, we saw some detours and headaches for drivers in the overnight hours. What is being done and what changes is that leading to?
Drivers are most familiar with the Market Street Bridge over the Schuylkill River, but PennDOT is actually replacing three bridges in the area, including the bridge over the Amtrak tracks and the Schuylkill Expressway, and on the east side, the bridge over the Schuylkill River Trail and the CSX tracks. Now, because of that work, PennDOT is closing the westbound Schuylkill Expressway overnights between 10 p.m. and 5 a.m. It started this past week, and it's a relatively straight detour. You're forced off at 30th, continue on to Schuylkill Avenue, and then back to the ramp to I-76 West. This detour is to accommodate overhead bridge construction. There are a lot of things under there that they need to deal with: water lines, power lines, communication lines, and it's all on top of the other detour that's in place, closing 30th Street itself and reducing westbound Market to one lane there.
How long will all this last?
Get ready. This phase with the westbound overnight expressway closure is expected to last until June 1st. The big construction detours will take a break this summer for the 250th birthday events, but starting in August, that's the biggie. Market Street itself over the Schuylkill River will be closing for more than a year, 14 months, with traffic detour to Chestnut and Walnut Streets. Matt, get used to it.
Can't wait. Thank you very much, Mike. KYW's Mike DiNardo joining us. We're just getting started on this edition of The Week in Philly. Much more to bring you right after this.
We have seen the damages that ICE has done across the country with different communities. We've seen what they did in Minnesota. And it's about making sure that this rogue agency doesn't come after our brothers and sisters here in Philadelphia.
Welcome back to The Week in Philly. That was Miguel Andrade with the Pennsylvania Immigration Coalition at a rally last weekend ahead of a city council hearing on the ICE Out legislation. And at that hearing on Monday, city council did indeed advance several bills dealing with ICE and how they are allowed to operate in Philadelphia. KYW's Nigel Thompson covered the hearing. He joins us now. And Nigel, what committee was this before? And it is a package of bills, correct?
Correct. It is a package of seven bills, to be exact, and it went in front of City Council's Committee of the Whole. So that is essentially all of City Council. So as you said, it kind of puts guardrails and restrictions in place on how ICE can carry out its operations in the city. You know, one particularly targeting ICE agents. I mean, we've seen them wear masks, try to conceal their identity. There's a bill in the package that pretty much does not allow them to conceal their identity. They can't use unmarked cars when carrying out operations. That's one. It kind of reinforces city guidelines that are already in place, kind of cements them into law of no data sharing with ICE. So like the police department can't share any information with ICE unless, you know, there's like a criminal case involved. It also kind of restricts where ICE can carry out its operations. Like any city-owned property, it restricts any ICE operations happening on those. The advocates I've spoken to and the people in support of this bill, it's about public safety. They're really trying to protect Philadelphia's immigrant communities and communities in general from the overt use of force that we've seen ICE use across the country.
This legislation draws a clear line. Philadelphia will not be complicit in policies that undermine the safety and dignity of our neighbors.
Now, council heard some testimony as part of this hearing, right? Who'd they hear from?
So they heard from a bunch of people.
The scariest thing to me is losing my family. Kids like me deserve to have our families united and our communities unafraid.
There were faith leaders that were talking about just how immigrant communities have been impacted by ICE's actions. We heard from public defenders to hear how it has impacted, you know, their work at the Criminal Justice Center. We heard from business owners, nonprofit leaders. So everybody in like the swath of like, you know, anybody who deals with the immigrant community in any capacity were there, you know, telling their piece.
And it sounds like vast majority were in favor of the package.
Yeah, everybody that spoke was very much in favor of the bill package. It would have been tough to sit there and be not in favor of the bill package, considering the crowd that was there.
It's interesting. One of the things since President Trump has come back into the office is Mayor Sherrell Parker has been trying to keep Philadelphia out of his crosshairs, and specifically with immigration. What did the Parker administration, I know they had people speak at the hearing, what did they have to say about this, of where the administration sits with regards to this batch of legislation?
Sure. So the administration had three kind of representatives there. There was the director of the Office of Immigrant Affairs, Charles Ellison. There was city solicitor Renee Garcia. And then there was Fran Healy from the police department. They appeared to support this bill package. However, they did call out that six of the seven bills, there was some like legally troubling language that was in there, and that brought some jeers from the crowd.
The remaining six bills contain legally problematic language that has been outlined in a confidential and privileged analysis by the law department.
But they did not say anything about that the administration would oppose this package once it passes. Their testimony was a lot about like, here's what we're trying to do to prepare for this. And then also, you know, the administration is upholding executive orders from previous mayors that already kind of do this stuff. And that was kind of their position on this.
So this passed pretty easily through the committee of the whole, right?
Yeah, it was unanimous.
Could we see a final vote soon?
Yeah. So in part of the vote, basically, they voted to also amend the rules of council. So they also voted to allow a first reading at city council's, you know, regular Thursday meeting this week. And so basically what that means is once it gets its first reading, it means next week in council's meeting, they can pass it. So they basically fast-tracked it.
All right. Thank you very much, Nigel. That's KYW's Nigel Thompson joining us. Much more coming your way on this edition of The Week in Philly. Don't go anywhere. It's The Week in Philly, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love.
This is a complex and persistent problem. Social determinants of health are associated with the cause of maternal and child health disparities in the Black community.
This is The Week in Philly, and this week was Black Maternal Health Week. And for more on this, let's bring in KYW Community Impact reporter Raquel Williams. And Raquel, this marked 10 years of Black Maternal Health Week, correct?
That's right, Matt. Absolutely.
So what is Black Maternal Health Week, and who started it?
Well, Black Maternal Health Week, it's actually a national campaign. It's held every year from April 11th through the 17th. Now, it was founded and led by a group called Black Mamas Matter Alliance, and it's also known as BMA. That's a national organization. It's dedicated to advancing Black maternal health rights and justice. It was actually placed with purpose during National Minority Health Month, which is actually every year starting April 11th.
So give us some context here. Why is it so critical to focus specifically on Black women's maternal health?
Oh, gosh, Matt. Well, it's critical because the disparities exist and they are well documented. They are well known and they're kind of severe. It's no longer just anecdotal. There is evidence of how structural inequities kind of show up in health outcomes. Across the United States, Black women are 3 to 4 times more likely to die from pregnancy-related causes than white women. And this exists regardless of insurance, regardless of status, income, or education.
And you mentioned those structural inequities that I think, unfortunately, we're all too familiar with. But are there specific things that make conditions much worse for Black women? Is there one thing we can kind of point to, or is it a collection of things?
Unfortunately, it's kind of a collection of things, and it depends on who you ask. And there are a lot of studies out there, but many say that it's rooted in systemic racism, unfortunately. There are a lot of treatable issues that Black women experience during pregnancy, like preeclampsia, infection, hemorrhage. But for some reason, many of us are misdiagnosed. Our complaints are minimized and often dismissed. And then when things are really bad, it's usually too late, and it does have adverse effects on baby and on mom.
So we mentioned 10 years of focusing on Black Maternal Health Week. Over this 10 years, has any progress been made? Like, is there anything we can point to that kind of shining this light and showing how important it is to focus on this has made things a little bit better?
I think progress is being made. It's important that, you know, clinicians especially understand that a Black woman's body is no different than any other woman's body. You know, I can tell you from experience that we are looked at as though we're like super people, superhuman, and we can withstand all of this pain. And, you know, our organs for some reason are somehow different. And I have to tell you that that is really rooted in racism back when our bodies were being studied involuntarily during slavery. So there's a lot of work to be done in this space, and organizations like Black Mamas Matter Alliance, and most recently the Oshun Family Center, which is dedicated in Philadelphia specifically to improving outcomes for Black birthing people. These advocates are very outspoken. They have led to more visibility on the subject. You're starting to see, you know, more characterizations on television and in movies pointing to these very issues, as we see more cases in the news about, you know, mothers, Black mothers specifically, being ignored, or things are different, things are happening, or, you know, they went into labor on the street because they were sent home. We know all the stories. They're there. Temple Health, actually, when you're talking about advancements, I remember not too long ago when they opened their new birthing center, you know, speaking to the people that were in charge of opening it, they were very outspoken and aware of the disparities that exist with Black women, and they are working to overturn that. They're working to make sure that that doesn't happen at Temple Health. So clinicians are starting to be much more aware, and we're trying to improve these outcomes.
All right. Thank you very much, Raquel. That's KYW Community Impact reporter Raquel Williams joining us. Time for a break. We will have more of this edition of The Week in Philly coming up right after this.
Somewhere, somebody knows who she is. We're hoping, we've got our fingers crossed, that the DNA will be the answer.
This is somebody's daughter or somebody's sister, and we'd like to connect them again.
Welcome back to this edition of The Week in Philly. Back in May of 2025, a woman was struck by a car on Broad Street, critically injured. She is still hospitalized right now at Jefferson Einstein Hospital, and she is also still unidentified. Officials don't know who she is. They are working to find out and asking for the public's help in trying to identify this woman. For more on this, let's bring in KYW Crime and Justice reporter Kristen Johansson. And Kristen, first off, tell us more about what happened last year.
So this did happen last May along Broad Street. It was right by Wyoming. This woman apparently just kind of jumped out into the middle of the street. The driver did stop and hasn't been charged, rendered aid, and they rushed this victim, this woman who's possibly in her 30s or 40s, to the hospital. She was in a coma for a long time, unable to speak. And she's still unable to speak, but she is awake now. And they're trying, they've been trying for a year to try and identify who this woman is. She was critically injured and, you know, even had her leg amputated. And so they're trying to reunite her with her family.
So you say she is conscious now, and still 11 months after the accident, they haven't been able to find any way to communicate with her to identify herself?
No. And they say that her eyes open and look around, but she doesn't say anything.
We're suspecting that maybe she's an immigrant. So we're going to have people speak to her in different languages to see if she'll react.
You know, they're thinking maybe she's Eastern European. So they're going to bring in different people to try and speak to her in different languages, like Russian or Ukrainian, something like that, to try and get her to see if there's a reaction even with her eyes. Like maybe she recognizes something. But they've cross-referenced this woman with missing person reports throughout the country, just seeing if anything matches up. But they ran her fingerprints. Her fingerprints didn't come back. So she's never been arrested before, isn't in the system. And the next thing they're going to do is genetic genealogy and try and track down her family tree.
So what do officials know about her? Do they have any concrete clues that they are working off of?
So she's in her 30s or 40s. She had brown hair. It's been turning gray, they said. She's a white woman. She had only a receipt from Acme, no other ID with her at the time. And she does have a tattoo on her shoulder.
It appears to be like flowers. It's an old faded tattoo.
And that's about it. That's all they know about her. They've been trying to communicate with her in some way over the last several weeks, you know, since she's woken up, but they don't know who she is.
Now, you mentioned bringing in people that speak other languages, and you mentioned the genealogy. Are there other things that officials, investigators could or will do to try and learn more here?
So the forensic genealogist that they're going to tap has done this before. Even if they get a branch or, you know, somewhere, like if they get something that says like she is Eastern European or something like that, at least they will have a direction. At least then maybe they'll have a country that they can call and say, hey, do you have anybody who's missing over there who hasn't talked to their family? They want this to be out there nationally because in this case, it's not a victim who's dead. In this case, it's somebody who's not well, who's injured, who needs a lot of help and rehab. And they just want to get the best care that they can for her.
How unusual is this for, you know, police to have somebody in this situation where they can't identify her? I mean, unfortunately, we hear this a lot with, you know, when bodies are found and stuff like that, that they struggle to identify. But to have someone who's alive that they have no ID for, how unusual is this?
I would say highly unusual. I mean, we've done stories on missing people and, you know, every day, you know, you'll see like 20 people that are missing and you'll see their pictures, even in just the Philadelphia region. And then quickly they're reunited with their family, you know, that person's been located and they're just somewhere in a different neighborhood or didn't call their mom or didn't get into contact with anybody. It's so unusual for the police to put out a picture of somebody, not only a picture of somebody alive, like, but somebody who has been through so much trauma, and you can see it in her face, how much trauma she's been through. And for them to push out her picture like that, they're really, really stretching. They've gone through every avenue that they can to find out who she belongs to or what family she belongs to. And this is their last hope, is to get somebody to recognize who she may be.
If people want to learn more, they want to try and help, or if they think they might know who this is, what should they do?
So we do have all the pictures on our website and our social media of this woman if you want to see a picture. But if you think you may know who she is, they ask you to call police or call Jefferson Einstein Hospital and let them know. Police would probably be the first step, or maybe you can give them an angle or something about her that maybe you saw her somewhere and that they could maybe even track down a neighborhood within Philly that maybe she lived or she knew somebody. But those are the two ways to try and help.
All right. Thank you very much, Kristen. That's KYW Crime and Justice reporter Kristen Johansson joining us. We need to step away. More of The Week in Philly coming up right after this.
The Week in Philly from KYW News Radio is sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Now's the time for a great deal on a new Honda. It's time to drive smarter with high-tech features and excellent reliability. It's time for intelligent design plus exciting performance. Get a new vehicle you'll love. Check out the Honda Civic, Accord, or HR-V. See dealer for financing details.
It's been a long time coming. I think especially for the guys that have been here for the long haul. Really appreciative of getting to this point.
All those kids are really developing, and they're playing in some tough situations. Obviously, it's a good future.
It's going to be awesome. Pittsburgh, Philly in the playoffs. So I know it's going to be a war, and I know we're going to be ready.
We continue on this edition of The Week in Philly, and these are happy days for Flyers fans. For the first time since 2020, Orange and Black have made the NHL playoffs, and they are taking on the Pittsburgh Penguins in the first round. Now, we taped this segment late in the week, but before the series started on Saturday, of course, stay tuned to KYW News Radio to get the latest updates game to game. But let's talk about this season overall to this point and bring in KYW's Dave Uram. And Dave, Flyers had spent years in the wilderness, kind of become an afterthought on the local sports scene. And frankly, after a solid start this season, they really fell off a cliff about a month before the Olympic break. And it looked like it was going to be more of the same. But after that 3-week break, they really came out a different team, didn't they?
They got hot, Matt. There was this California road trip where they had 3 games out west. And, you know, there was one of the players referenced after they clinched the playoffs about how critical that California road trip was in their success, and they never stopped. They still haven't won 4 in a row in over 2 years, but despite that, they were able to climb up the standings enough and get in. I think just to sum everything up, they're really fun. You know what I mean? They're a fun team. They seem like likable guys. They have a pretty good mix of guys who have been around for a little bit, like Sean Couturier, their captain, and Travis Konecny and Travis Sanheim, their alternate captains, the only 3 players on this team who were on the team the last time that they made the playoffs in 2020, the last time that they had playoff games in South Philadelphia in 2018. And then what really is the key thing, they have these young guys that are the future, that are super promising, led by 19-year-old Porter Martone, Tyson Forster, who's been with the Flyers for a few seasons now, but is also super young. Their goalie, Dan Vladar, who Danny Briere picked up in the offseason, Danny Briere, their general manager. Dan Vladar has been solid in net all season long, and the defining moment is him making that save in the shootout. You can ride a hot goalie as long as you possibly can, no matter how good your team is or not good your team is. You got a hot goalie. Anything can happen, Matt.
You talked about them being young and getting hot, but do you think this is kind of the foundation year where we can expect the Flyers to be a pretty consistent contender, maybe not necessarily Stanley Cup contender, but where the playoffs become the rule rather than the exception?
100%. Once you get in, that's the expectation moving forward. I don't think this thing was a fluke. The expectation moving forward as these players get another year older and have more experience will be they have to continue to make the playoffs. And that's a good thing. That's a very good thing.
Now, the Sixers are also playoff bound in the NBA.
Heads come hanging and scoring! Flexing on them!
They won their play-in game on Wednesday. They beat Orlando, so they clinched the 7th seed in the East. They are matching up with the Boston Celtics, with that series also starting this weekend. But to me, there's much more of a shrug with this 76ers team, because yes, they're back in the playoffs after missing it last year, but they're really doesn't seem to be much of a buzz at all for this team.
Well, the energy in that building for the play-in game against Orlando was outstanding. It was phenomenal. I think it's a fair statement to predict that the Sixers, the odds are against them in this series. But, I look at it this way. Like, the alternative of not making the playoffs would have been more disappointing than them making the playoffs because, you know, it's not like they were going to get a super high draft pick based on where they were in the standings. Tyrese is a young star. VJ Edgecombe is a young star in the making. Paul George finally seems healthy again. Joel, unfortunately, of course, has had his various reasons for being out. He just had his appendix removed. There's no formal timeline on Joel returning. I know him being around the team certainly made the team happy the other night. They were very happy to see him back for the first time since getting his appendix removed. But to get back to your question, I'll put it to you this way. The 76ers and the Celtics have an extremely storied history. They've played each other in the playoffs about two dozen times. And since 1985, you know, spread out from different years, it has been very one-sided. The 76ers have not won a playoff series against one of their premier rivals since May 23rd, 1982, when Andrew Toney, the Boston Strangler, scored 34 points in a Game 7 of the conference finals to advance and upset Boston on the road. Since then, 1985, 2002, 2012, 2018, 2020, and 2023, the Celtics have beat the Sixers in a playoff series. That's six playoff series in a row. So let this Tyrese Maxey, Vijay Edgecombe, Paul George, maybe who knows if Joel Embiid will be back in time for this series. Let them have their chance at it to try to end this long drought of losing to the rival Celtics.
We'll keep an eye on it. Thank you very much, Dave. That's KYW's Dave Uram joining us. Final segment coming up on this edition of The Week in Philly. We'll bring it to you right after this.
The festival is heading to the parkway, but we can never leave the neighborhood.
Wrapping things up on this edition of The Week in Philly, and we had some big news this week regarding Pride Week, which is coming up in early June. And for more on that, let's bring in KYW Shara Day Howard. Shara, specifically the news we're talking about, the Pride Festival, kind of the center of Pride Week, it's moving. Tell us more.
It is moving. Philly Pride 365 is taking the party to the parkway.
We start in the morning with our march that will be leaving from the neighborhood June 7th, 2026, from 12 to 7 p.m. on the parkway.
Tyrell Brown, CEO and president of Philly Pride 365, says it's starting a little bit early this year with some other events. So May 31st is actually the beginning of Pride Week. And then throughout that entire week, there'll be a load of things for everybody to do, including going back to the neighborhood for a night out.
Festival used to be in the neighborhood, so we're moving to the parkway. Why make the move?
So it's going from the neighborhood to the parkway because simply the LGBTQ community in Philly has outgrown the neighborhood. Over 150,000 people showed up last year in 2025. So it's not plausible to fit all of these wonderful gay people in one spot.
You know, kudos to our community for showing up and showing out. You just can't fit 150,000 people in those streets, even if you expand to Walnut Street as we did last year.
So that's understandable, but I'm sure there's a little bit of controversy here, you know, taking something out of the neighborhood that it's so centered to the celebration of Pride. How is this landing with the LGBTQ community?
You know, change is always hard, right? Change isn't easy. But guess what? It's not the first time that Pride hasn't been in the neighborhood. So originally, it started on the Parkway. And then in the 90s, it went to Love Park. And then it went to Penn's Landing. So this is just a change that, according to Tyrell Brown, it's about accessibility. It's about making sure that everyone can be there. And then given the political climate right now, it's about security.
But the neighborhood is not shut out of activities, right? There'll be plenty going on there during Pride Week?
So much going on. Now, the neighborhood is being brought with them. They're not leaving the neighborhood. They're bringing the neighborhood to the parkway. So they're in partnership with Washington Square West Civic Association, as well as the new Pride Visitor Center.
We are strategically partnering with all the neighborhood businesses to make sure that they are getting the economic impact that we've provided since 2022.
What are some of the things that'll be happening in the neighborhood?
The main thing is Pride Night Out. So that means get your buddy, get your friends, get your loved ones, and go out and enjoy the city. Enjoy all of the wonderful things that the neighborhood has to offer, whether it be food, it be art, whether it be wares, it's all there.
Something else different this year, ticketing for Pride Festival, they're moving it, and now you got to buy a ticket to get in, right? What's the deal there?
Yeah, it's like Back to the Future again, because when I was a kid, you had to pay to get into Penn's Landing. It was $10. I saw Cyndi Lauper, though. I mean, that was pretty amazing. But big names, big changes sometimes take money, and I think right now people are kind of they're up in the air about it, but the emotions will eventually land, but there will be accessible ticketing.
There are still avenues for free access.
And there will be accessibility, free access, all of these things on their website, phillypride365.org. Get your tickets.
$10 a ticket?
$10 a ticket.
All right. Thank you very much, Shara. KYW Shara Day Howard joining us. And that will do it for this edition of The Week in Philly from KYW News Radio, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you like on on a Honda you'll love. This week's episode was produced by Sabrina Boyd-Circa and Brian Seltzer. My name is Matt Leon. Thanks so much for listening, and enjoy the rest of your weekend.